Welcome to a special episode of the Smuggler's Den, our pre-Gen Con special. I'm your host, Tiny Grimes.
And I'm Ben Tully. Make sure you check out the entire podcast, and that's our in its entirety. Get the full effect by going to either our Facebook page or emailing Tiny and myself at smugglersdenpodcast@gmail.com or checking out Tiny while he streams live on Twitch TV at twitch.tv/TinyGrimes.
And you can also check out friend of the show, TGO, and his stream at TGO520. If you want to see either another top-level player, or if you consider me a chump and you just want to see a top-level player, TGO is a great guy to watch stream. He's an excellent player. I imagine he will have some good insights as well.
And TGO is not the only player from Top Tier Gaming who's going to be streaming.
Really?
Yeah, did you not see this too? No. I thought you were just like, you like TGO more than Jarrett.
But, no, I wouldn't say that. I like them both. They're both wonderful.
But Jarrett will also, they both, Top Tier Gaming has stepped up and they will be streaming their games in the same way that Tiny has been and Table Flip has been. But it's going to be the Top Tier Gaming guys, Jarrett and TGO.
Oh, that'll be great. I feel like I'm a bit of a trailblazer here.
In all ways, right? Because you came up with the first podcast. You were the first streamer.
Yeah, I feel like a settler going west and, you know, on the Oregon Trail and then getting syphilis and dying and then the other people doing it better than me. Well, that's all right.
You know, syphilis is a sexually transmitted disease. Do you mean one of the other ones that you
get? Yeah. Yeah, I guess that is what I mean. I actually don't know the diseases they got on the Oregon Trail.
How about cholera? Let's say you got
cholera. That actually sounds much better. Good point, Ben. Thank you very much. All right, so on to the pre-Gen Con information. All right, so the Octagon Tournament had just wrapped up this week with the Swiss portion. The top 16 will be starting this week, and it should be a lot of fun. And you want to hear something crazy? One Tiny Grimes is not going to make the top 16.
I'm shocked.
Yeah. I'm a little bit annoyed, but this is a really good lesson, and we'll talk about this a little bit more in a bit, that the way the tournament scoring works in this, you're never safe unless you are way above everyone else, and you're never out of it unless you're way below everyone else, because you can have a great tournament, go into the last round as like the fourth or fifth seed in the tournament, get swept because you make one mistake thinking you have two Sith objectives and you only have one. Deep breaths. And then you're out of the tournament. So be aware. But the tournament's going to start into the top 16 this week. And I'm going to try to stream and comment on some of the games. So stay tuned to the Twitch stuff. I'll try to keep people appraised, but I'm going to see if I can set that up with some people. Since I'm out, might as well comment on somebody's games.
Yeah.
All right, Ben. So have you been to any major tournaments?
Have I been to any major, like...
any major tournaments ever in your life?
Beyond regionals. No, not anything beyond regionals.
You haven't? Interesting. No. I was thinking you had. I was thinking that was, like, the perfect way to segue into this because you'd be like, yeah, I've been to X, Y, and Z.
No, I have not.
Oh, well, very interesting. Well, I have. I've been to a couple world championships for different games. I've been to Gen Con for Game of Thrones. I think between Ben and I, we have some pretty good advice for you for going into Gen Con, especially if this is your first major event. And with 120 people already pre-signed up for this event, I think it's going to be a lot of people's first event. What do you think, Ben?
Yeah, this is it, Star Wars, right? Like, I think this is way and by far, normally FFG always has that cap, right? It's 120 people for an event. But I don't think Thrones has ever hit that cap. So last year at Thrones, you know, there was the big change between Gen Con being Worlds and it not becoming Worlds for Thrones last year. But even then, I still think it was only, what, like 60, 70 people.
Yeah, something like 70, which we thought was great.
Which is a huge number for Thrones, yeah. But 120 is a lot of people. And so while I don't have the expertise of, you know, going to a large scale event like this, I mean, I haven't even, you know, I know a lot of Magic events will just kind of draw this number of people, even like on a regular kind of not major event. Like this is one of like a small event for some Magic events. I haven't even been to anything like that. So, but I think I have a lot of information about how to play the game properly and not get screw yourself over, when you're trying to play at a top caliber level in such a large field.
And, you do own Hoth now, is that correct?
Yeah, I did win a small tournament this weekend, to get the game kit season 2 playmat and, my first copy of an Erebos Luke.
Which, TGO has informed me is miscut. So for anyone who has one out there, check your Luke, make sure it is not slightly bigger than the other cards in your deck. If it is, take them out because you might get DQ'd for having marked cards.
Is it really that big of a difference?
That's what TGO said. I haven't looked at it yet. I just thought I'd throw that out there as a warning to people to definitely check that. Maybe just his is miscut.
Maybe.
He's claiming that they're all miscut.
It is print on demand.
Yep. So that's something to be aware of. All right. So we both own Hoth now. And now it's time to move on to Gen Con advice and preparation. So I think the biggest piece of advice, and I give this for every game I play, and I think Ben is the ultimate testament of not doing this sometimes, but build and test your deck ahead of time and don't make changes right before the event, even if they look like they're going to be good, because in this game, you're not changing one or two cards. You're changing the whole complexion of your deck when you make that two or three pod change that looks good at that moment. You really need, if you've done a lot of thorough testing, don't succumb to that temptation. You know, someone says, hey, have you thought about running the pit in there? Look, it's got Spice Visions. And you're like, oh my God, Spice Visions and Boba Fett would be amazing, but I've never tested the pit. Don't just stick it in. Don't do it. Resist. Ben, can you help our listeners with some tangible examples of this?
Yeah, so I think one of the things to think about on this is when you're not used to playing with cards that, you know, you've been testing a deck or you've been consistently playing, say your favorite thing to play is a Sith Navy combination. Somebody comes along and makes a suggestion Tiny just made about, you know, including feeding the pit so you have access to Spice Vision. You really just, you don't have the depth of experience to include with how you're supposed to play those cards. And so you might have Spice Visions in your hand and it becomes a card where you're like, oh, I want to see how this works. And you played at an inopportune time where if you had been practicing with the deck, you would know, like, I want to save it for that time that I can remove somebody from the challenge when Palpatine strikes on defense so I can play it and use get six tactic icons or something like that. I had an example of that for the tournament this weekend. I won't mention the cards specifically, but there was a couple cards where one of the cards in the objective set has a reaction and it's a reaction that I wanted to use very consistently. And there was one turn where, you know, a couple turns where I was using it and the reaction was working fine. And I went into a turn and I was like, okay, this turn relies on me drawing from my discard pile from this reaction. And I kind of played through it and I was like, and I didn't trigger it. And it was only because I hadn't, it was the first time using it and I hadn't used it before.
Yeah. An example of that, since Ben is for some reason is being secretive, would be like Palpatine. Obviously, it's probably not the first time you've used Palpatine before, but forgetting to trigger a Palpatine reaction upon an objective blowing up is going to be a huge game swinger. And if you're throwing in a new card you haven't used before that has a strange reaction, then it's even tougher.
You know, I also come from a lot of experience. So not only is it just not practicing with the cards that gives you a hard time, but as people have been listening for a while know, going into the Kublacon regional event, the Force Pack was released that day, the new Force Pack that had the lucrative contracts in it. And I played a couple of test games right before the event started with Tiny.
I sandbagged both of those games.
It did really well, and I was like, okay, I'm going to try this. You know, it's a scum deck. You know, we haven't seen one of those before in competitive play. Maybe I can make this work. And it totally, completely, and was utterly just a waste of time because essentially I sat down. This deck wasn't really at a caliber that needed to be able to handle some of the other versions of decks out there, not even just the top deck at the time being Smuggler's Den, but it couldn't handle any of the Rebel decks or anything that was floating around. And so it was a really bad choice going into the event to make such a big change as to start using really new objectives that I'd never used before.
Yeah, that's a dangerous thing to do. I mean, even I did the same thing. I got a little luckier than you with that Untouchables deck, where I was able to use a few surprise cards out of it and shock people and get lucky and get Yavin 4 most of the time. But the games when I didn't, it was like, oh, yeah, I hadn't seen this in testing. That's going to be a problem. And almost lost the finals because, like, if I had run a standard Jedi deck, I would have been fine in the finals, but running that crazy Untouchables almost cost me a regional win.
Right.
Okay, so closely associated with that is something that we've seen a bunch of times, and that's don't run the wrong affiliation card. If you have affiliation X only in your deck, you have to run that affiliation, and this happens more often if you have a whole deck, and then you're like, no, oh, the pit would be awesome in this deck. And you just slide it in. And then you get to the event and you're running a Sith affiliation with the pit. You flop the pit and your opponent goes, what's going on here? The pit says, scum affiliation only. Why do you have a Sith? And you go, womp, womp. I just got DQ'd.
Right. So, I mean, this happens to a lot of people. It happens to top players coming into small events. It happens after you make announcements. So at our regional that we had at Game Empire, I made this announcement. I said to people, please be aware, like, we've had this issue. Check your decks right now. And people went and they checked. And I still had to punish essentially two different people for not having the correct cards in their deck.
Yep. We had that at KublaCon. At our league finals.
In the third round in KublaCon. Yeah, I sat down with somebody. Insane. It was the third round. Yep. And I was like, you know, you're playing an illegal deck. And they were like, what do you mean I'm playing an illegal deck? Well, that's an illegal deck that you have right there. And then it became this huge thing. They're like, well, what do you want me to do? Like, you know, we're in the third round. I'm like, well, I think you have to take a DQ from this point forward. Like, not this point forward, but like for this round, we'll give you a chance to sub it out. You're not in contention really for the top spot. Right. But
And that was really us being very generous. I mean, if that person had been in contention at all, they would have just been straight DQ'd because they had potentially a better deck through the early rounds that they had won with because it was illegal.
Right.
And we ran into that this week with our finale in the league. In the first round, Gabe and Andrew played, and Gabe beat Andrew, and Gabe sat down next to me. And I like to joke around and start the mind games right away. And so he flips up his Sith objective or his Sith affiliation, puts out a couple objectives. I see scum in there, and I'm just messing with Gabe. And I'm like, hey, Gabe, wouldn't it be cool if you could play the pit in this deck? You're not playing the pit, right? And he looks at me funny, and he's like, why? What would be the problem with playing the pit? I'm like, well, the pit is scum only. You're not playing the pit, right, Gabe? And he's like, what if I am? I was like, well, that's going to be a problem. And then he flips over his pit, and he's like, yeah, I am playing the pit. And so it was a problem. It was like, well, you just beat Andrew with an illegal deck. So guess what? You didn't beat Andrew. Congratulations, Andrew. Default, your two favorite words. So it's uncomfortable. It's really uncomfortable to have to DQ someone when they do it. So just don't do it. It would really be terrible at Gen Con. You know, you fly across the country, you prep, you get there, and then you have an illegal deck.
Don't do it.
Don't do it. Be careful. Don't do it. Remember, Tarkin is Navy only. Heart of the Empire is Sith only. Pit is scum only. There's another scum only. Lucrative contracts. What's the rebel only? Mobilization.
Mobilize the squadrons.
Yeah, Lando is smugglers only. And is it Red 5?
Red 5.
Yeah, Red 5 is Jedi only. So be aware of those. If you're running any of those, stop the podcast right now and go check your deck. Make sure it's legal. All right, Ben, what other advice do you have for our friendly listeners?
All right, so something that I want to point out, and something that we've talked about, and just, we don't have to spend a lot of time on this, a bunch of times in the podcast, and it's normally in reference to the card Swindle, and when you play the card Swindle.
As soon as you can, right?
No, that is never the appropriate time to use the card Swindle. And as you know, we know there's a lot of tricks that goes along with smugglers and spies nowadays, more so than other ones, but not exclusively. I mean, Jedi Mind Trick comes to mind for the Jedi decks. But essentially what I'm trying to say here is really, really, really think about when you're going to play those cards, right? The ideal time is not when your opponent has time to respond to it by changing their game plan. And so I have a very specific example from that happened this weekend. I was, you know, playing at one of the people at the tournament. I had Darth Vader on the table with his lightsaber. The dial was at 9. If I took out two objectives, I won the game. And in my hand, I had Orbital Bombardment. And so before I drew, I had an idea in my mind. I was like, okay, if I play Orbital Bombardment, I get an extra blast. That means that Vader can take down an objective. And then this weakened objective that's down, I can use, you know, just these chump guys to take down that one. You know, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to close out the game right here. And so I drew up my cards. I got some different types of, you know, it was more control based at that point. It was like a Force Lightning and a couple guys with tactics icons. And I was like, oh, that would be a pretty good alternative, except I'm going to win the game right here. So this is fine. Not a big deal. And my opponent played Bamboozle. Didn't help him at all. His unit that he pulled the focus off of was double tactics, but he pulled it off, put it on Vader. And I was like, okay, well, I'm just going to change my game plan now. And so, like, I just, you know, I played the control cards instead. I played the Force Lightning. I put out the tactics icons. I didn't attack. I didn't use Orbital Bombardment. And I was quite happy with the results on that. If he had waited, if I had spent 4 resources to put out Orbital Bombardment, and that was the only card I could put out, and I go to attack with Vader, and he's like, actually, I have an action here. And he plays Bamboozle and stops Vader from attacking. He's probably just won the game for himself right there.
Right. Yeah, that's been happening to me all the time on the stream. People just, like, they get the card and they play the card. And Swindled is a great example, and Bamboozle is an even better example. You just have to know when to play these cards. And the answer, when to play them, is the last possible moment. Force Choke becomes infinitely better if it's after they declare Luke as a defender and he's going to take 2 damage from Vader. You don't choke him first, then attack with Vader, because then he's not going to block with Luke. You have to know when it is that you should be using these, and you have to exploit your tricks to the maximum. If you just play them right off when you get them, then you're probably not going to get the most value from them.
Yeah, and that's something to really think about. And that really goes into, and just in general, being aware of the action windows.
And the action windows becomes pretty tricky. There's really some problems that have come. And I was watching TGO's stream today, and this problem happened directly in that stream, where let's say there's a window, and we'll start easy. Let's say you have Luke, and you strike with Luke, and he has Trust Your Feelings. And then you go, okay, yeah, combat's over. I'll take my unopposed. And they say, no, wait, I want to Force Lightning him then. Because by you saying combat's over, that's you passing your action, and I have an action after that. You can't then go.
Yeah, right. So, I mean, just to clarify here, right? So what can happen if you're attacking with Luke and he puts the focus on to strike, you have first window response to use Trust Your Feelings, or first window, not a response, but first window action, to remove the focus from Luke and put it on your Trust Your Feelings. As we know, if its combat hasn't resolved at this point, Luke would then have to strike again. And so sometimes it would behoove you not to have Luke strike again, but for the combat, the conflict to resolve, the engagement to resolve, and then you can remove the focus on Luke and strike at a different objective. So what's Tiny saying is, if you strike with Luke and have Trust Your Feelings, and you say, I'm not going to do Trust Your Feelings, or we're moving to unopposed, you're skipping one of your opponent's action windows at that point, because they always have an ability to play an action, and you've already declared your intent of what you're going to do of not removing your focus for Trust Your Feelings.
Right.
And that opens up the window for Tiny.
Yep. And this is where it gets tricky, because you've passed your window without saying pass. What you should say, if you want to be really clear on action windows, is I'll pass my action window here. Because the problem is the dark side player is in a weird spot, because the light side player has to pass. Because if they just go, I'll lightning here. I've seen a lot of shady players go, whoa, no, no, it's my window, man. I was going to remove that focus. And you're like, no, no, you weren't. I mean, you were already going to blow it up with the unopposed, and you could blow up another one. No, I wasn't going to do that. I just wanted to blow this one up, like, double time. And it's really difficult for that dark player. So most dark players will wait until you, what's the word we're looking for? You passively pass it, I guess.
Yeah, I guess that's the best way to say it. You know, there's still a window. The dark side player still has an option. And if you say, I mean, your intent is very clear right there. If you say, and now we go to the unopposed, right? That's you saying, I don't have any more actions.
Exactly.
And so it's not you getting to skip over your opponent's actions. Your opponent still has an action there.
Right.
They should still take it. They should feel comfortable taking it.
You have passed yours, but not your opponent's.
And it's not on your opponent to ask this question. Your opponent shouldn't have to go, do you have an action?
Right.
Do you want to remove that focus?
Because at that point,
unless they're doing it every turn, they're right. tipping what's in their hand.
Now, if I do that to you, I'm actually probably trying to get you to do it and trying to trick you into thinking I have a Force Lightning. So if I do that.
And make a strike on the same objective.
Yeah. I'll do that for sure to try to trick you and mind game you. But most people are not going to do this. So when that happens, don't be angry. So what happened is on TGO's stream, someone had the Falcon.
Two damage was done to the Falcon.
They said, you know,
conflict
Vader,
is Vader's, over.
Right. Vader struck the Falcon. They said, okay, conflict's over. And TGO said, well, I have an action in that window after you have passed your action by saying combat's over. And I will choke my own Vader and put the third damage on the Falcon to kill it. And the guy went crazy and was like, no, that's not right. I said the combat was over and I have first action after the combat's over. And he's like, well, you skipped over my action. And he's like, well, if that's the case, then I want to take my action in combat to return the Falcon. And this is where it's going to become a huge deal because the Falcon is such a critical card and so powerful that if you screw up and let your Falcon die, or if you take the chance, right? Because you might only need one more damage on that objective. So you're looking at it and you're going, I have the action. Ugh. Do I bounce him? He only has one card in hand. Do I bounce him, not blow up that objective, and wait till next turn? Or do I take the chance, say pass, blow up with the unopposed? Darn it, they choked me. If they choke you, don't go crazy because you're passing their action window. You have passed your action window when you say, I'm passing.
Yep.
Sorry, when you don't say I'm passing, when you just say combat's over.
Yeah, and so, I mean, that's something to be really aware of. I think, you know, just to clarify what Tiny's talking about on that one, he's talking about if you pull up the Falcon before you get to the in the windows that you have in conflict, the window happens before unopposed is awarded. So if you pull up your Falcon to save it from any types of shenanigans that your opponent might have, you lose out on the unopposed. So be aware of that. You might only do two damage when you're expecting to do three.
Yeah, and then it gets tricky.
And then the other side of it is, really, really pay attention to what's happening. You know, this isn't just some type of local event where the TO may be friends with one guy and not the other. I mean, this is a big event. Like, FFG is going to have somebody there, be it Nate or one of their other staff members who plays the game and designs the game. Somebody will be there to rule. And so it's going to be on you to explain very clearly what happened.
Yeah.
And your opponent might be like, no, 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 I wanted to do this. And you could be like, listen, this is what he said. He engaged. You know, he said, I'm moving to unopposed. I said, no, I have an action. He was like, well, no, then I won't have an action. You know, you have to be very clear. You know, it's going to be very close to other people playing. So maybe you'll have somebody who can like back you up on what was said. You know, just be very careful with this because it's very tricky. It can be very, you know, important to the game. So people are going to try and, you know, smooth out the edges and try and get to, you know, a result that is most influential for them. And so
yeah.
You just want to be very careful.
And a Falcon dying is probably going to be the difference between the game for either one of you. If you're able to be slick enough to kill that Falcon, you're probably going to win. And if they can weasel their way into getting that Falcon back in their hand, they probably win. So like that type of situation, like in the stream that we're talking about, the guy became so angry he just quit the game because it's such a big moment. If the Falcon dies, you lose. So be careful on that. Be aware of the action windows, like Ben said. Be real careful about what you say concerning the action windows. You know, have it in your head as you're saying it, that you're talking about these specific action windows, and just be careful. Be clear on what you're doing also. Another small point is somewhat closely associated with this, and that's remember that shields can shield objectives. So when you're doing your calculations, like Ben was saying, like if you need three more on an objective and you attack with a Falcon, that's only two unless you're willing to chance it and get the unopposed for three. The same thing goes with shields. I mean, I've had a number of games where someone will attack me and I'll shield that objective and they don't have quite enough blast. And then they're like, oh, that was a brilliant move by you. And I'm like, no, not really. It was more of a terrible oversight by you. Because shielding is just such a standard part of the game. So just remember that as you're making your calculations, that shields can shield objectives, and most likely they will in a situation where it's between blowing it up or not blowing it up.
And to kind of just touch base on shields, Tanya doesn't know I'm about to say this, but I'm going to anyway. But be careful with shields, because there is a certain point when you can't, if you forget to put a shield on, there's a point where you really can't, your opponent doesn't have to let you put a shield appropriately on, you know, if the edge battle starts, or maybe if an edge battle resolves, or, you know, even sometimes when defenders are declared, right? Like you don't put on a shield, you know, maybe your opponent waits a second, gives you a tick, right? They might declare Han as a defender.
It's even worse than that.
To do the one damage to kill the guy who was supposed to get a shield on it.
So Ben's right on that. You know, if once anything has happened, it's too late. Once your opponent declares a defender, it's too late, because it specifically says you have to declare the shield as you're declaring the attacker. And in your local event, and maybe even in your regional, people are kind of lax with that. At Gen Con,
they don't have to be.
No one's going to be lax with that.
Just remember that a shielding is not a passive effect. It has the word may in it. It means that if you don't place it, you didn't place it. It wasn't something that had to happen. You decided, you know, by forgetting not to do it.
Yep. And just to be clear on something, if you're playing at Gen Con, the, you know, one of the two big events of the year, do not give your opponent anything. This game is all about the small details. If they forget their shield, they forgot their shield. If they forget to draw with counsel, and then after you've refreshed, they say, whoa, I forgot to draw with counsel. You say, yeah, sorry, man. You know, hope you remember next time. Because you know what? They're not going to give it to you. And even if they do, that doesn't mean you should reciprocate. I know it's going to sound weird that you shouldn't reciprocate someone's generosity. Don't do it at Gen Con. Do it in your local meta. You're building meta mates. If you're going all the way to Gen Con and you're paying all the money to get in Gen Con, and you're playing in a world event, treat it like a world event and be serious and don't do take backs and don't let people get away with anything.
And I totally agree with Tiny. I think people who listen to the podcast, whatever that portion may be, who are attending Gen Con, they may, you know, they'll just nod at you and say, yep, you're right. I made a mistake. But there's probably equally a larger number of people who don't listen to the podcast, and they're going to take it really personally that you are like denying them their guaranteed card because their friends always let them do it or whatever the situation is. Mm-hmm. And just be aware that it might really get uncomfortable for you. The person might get really angry, and it's not on you. They've made the mistake. You can feel free to call it to you over, explain the situation, explain to the person that, like, you know, this is on you. Like, this isn't something that has to happen. Like, if you forget to do it, you forget to do it. We're sorry. You know, feel free to be, you know, if you feel like you're becoming an aggressive situation, call a TO over and have them explain to the person, like, it's not on this person to do this for you. You have to do it yourself.
Yep. And it's one card in this game could be huge. Like, counsel is often the difference between winning an edge battle and losing an edge battle. It's just how the game works, and you have to be on that, and you have to remember things. All right. Another important aspect is fully understanding the tournament point system. And a lot of people think they do until they play in a tournament. And every tournament I've been at, I try to talk to every person at the tournament, and at least a quarter of them will say, I would have won this game if I had fully understand this, and now I lost the match because of it. You have to understand how matches work. If you don't have a good understanding, you can go to my Twitch stream, and I have one particular match where I have both sides of the match, and I go through in great detail about how I'm going to lose this match, but I'm quite cognizant of the fact that I am going to lose it and how the match point scoring works. Now, it's a little less important now since the swing is so great that if you win them both, you get 8 versus if you split, you only get 5. But certainly if you were to make the top 16, and you never know, that 1 point could be the difference between you making a cut and not making a cut.
Yeah, I mean, it's getting a little better, but even like watching the results come in, I haven't been actively participating in the results for the Octagon tournament, but I still get the emails as part of the Smuggler's Den podcast email. And, you know, I'll read the results, and people who write these really convoluted ways of how the match resolved. And it's not very straightforward. It's not like, it's not even like the basic, like, I got 3, they got 2 using the old scoring system. It's like, I played with my dark side deck and won, and a total number of objectives was destroyed. And then they played with their dark side deck and a total number. And like, really what was happening is like the light side won, and it was based on the light side tiebreaker.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. There's been a number of times where I'm just like, okay, what was the result? Who got the 3? Who got the 2? Because your explanation is not clear. And the reason is because the point system, if you don't have that utter understanding of it, it can become a bit overwhelming, where in fact it's really just pretty simple. If dark side wins, blow up a lot of objectives. If light side wins, stall them as long as humanly possible and get that dial up. That's really what it comes down to.
And so the other thing to be really aware of and cognizant of in terms of these types of match setups that FFG has for the tournament is really how swingy these point systems are, especially the new point system. It is, to some degree, kind of crazy the types of scenarios that you can get into and how important it is to just kind of stay on your game the whole time, which can be really hard. I mean, it's a 7-hour prelim event. So you're going to be playing what appears to be somewhere close to 6 rounds of Swiss, followed by, if you do well, into the cut, which could be 3 to 4 rounds, I guess, depending on how many people they're gonna go with on that.
Yep.
But I mean, so, you know, Tiny and I both can talk about how this has happened to us. But you can get into a situation where you are comfortably in the lead. Comfortable being a very relative term here, because what turns out to happen is, if you get into a higher bracket and have had, you know, a pretty comfortable lead, and you make a mistake, or the decks don't go your way, and your draws don't go your way, you can end up in a situation where you get, you know, 8-0'd, right, by somebody who's also a top player. And that 8-0 may, you know, the lack of points in that round may push you out of the top 8 completely.
Yeah, it's really interesting how that works, because you are playing the very best players at the end of the day. In Game of Thrones, when you end up playing at the top tables, you're in.
So,
because your strength is so
for example,
good.
In a Game of Thrones.
What?
Sorry, try it again. So, for example, in a Game of Thrones, if you have won, if it's a 6-round event and you have won 5 games in a row and you go into your last round, what happens, Tiny?
You're in. I mean,
right.
You're in regardless, and you're even going to have a good seed because of strength of schedule. Whereas in this game, where you've won all your rounds, but you know, some of them have been 5-4s, a couple of them 8-0s, you're doing really well. Let's say you're the 3rd seed, you get 8-0'd, and a whole bunch of mid-level people 8-0 their people. That's a 16-point swing. That's enormous. You're probably out of the tournament.
And it can be really huge. You know, we see it a lot of times where, it's happened to me in events where I went, in the old scoring system, I 402 people in a row, got up into that rounds where I was playing better players, and I just got 04'd 04'd two times in a row. And that was it. I was out of the tournament. I didn't make the cut in that one. And the people who then kind of skyrocket into the cut are people who are kind of mid-level players. Maybe they lost their first round, won their second one, lost their third. And then they go up against these people who are kind of middle of the road, and they get lucky, or they actually are better than they seem when they're playing, or they're playing less consistent opponents. And all of a sudden they go, you know, in this situation, they went 4-0, 4-0. You know, they all of a sudden had 8 points that they didn't have before, and that will catapult them into the top rounds, you know, the cut. And the same thing, and even more so will happen if they can go 8-0, 8-0 and get 16 points and just go from, like, you know, maybe they're middle of the pack, maybe they're in the mid 30s, right? But those two wins like that will catapult them score wise into the final cut.
Yeah. We have a couple people like that in the Octagon tournament that were, one guy was like 25 places below me, maybe 30 below me. In the tournament, I went 0-4. He went 4-0 against a really low-level player, and he might make the cut, and I'm not going to make the cut. And it's going to be even more the case with 8-0s. So really the lesson here is, if you are doing well, you have to stay dialed in the whole time. Do not get swept at the end of the day when you're exhausted and you can barely think. Hold it together enough to at least get that 4. And if you feel like, well, I'm out of it, I lost the first 2-0-8, you're not out of it. You're never out of it with the scoring system. You can always jump from the middle to the top just with 1-8-0. And if you were to go 2-8-0s back-to-back against low-level competition, I mean, you could jump all the way to like a 5 seed. So basically the bottom line is, stay dialed in no matter where you are, whether you're near the top, near the middle, near the bottom. You've always got a chance with this crazy scoring system.
Yeah, and it is a really crazy scoring system. And it'll be interesting to see if FFG at the end of this event, and maybe not this event, but maybe after this event and Worlds, they take a look at the scoring system and say, okay, you know, we really shouldn't be having this. Like in Thrones, it's very consistent, right? If you can get up there with, be 5-1 for the day or 4-2 with a strong strength of schedule, you're in. Like, it shouldn't be a situation where, you know, a player can come in and get, you know, lose in the last round and only in the last round, right? Say they've won the tiebreaker every time. So they've gone, you know, 5 rounds, 5-4, right? And they get to the last round and they lose it completely. You know, there's no reason that players who have lost whole rounds should be able to catapult themselves into the top 16 at that point.
If you went 5-4, 5-4, 5-4, 5-4, and someone else went 8-0, 0-8, 0-8, 0-8, and then went 8-0, they're ahead of you.
Right.
And they've had a just atrocious day. You know, they played awful players the whole day because they were at the bottom. You were pretty near the top playing top-level players. And then, wham-poozle, you are out.
It also means there's a lot of swing in the individual rounds, right? Where like a player can win, they get bumped up for a round, or now in like the high point bracket area, and then they get knocked down right again. So I mean, just be aware that like it's gonna be very swingy like that.
Yeah, it's gonna be a crazy day. I mean, really, the only answer is to win all your games.
Yep, like, just win everything. I mean, I think that's a safe bet.
Yep, just win them all, and then you're fine. I know it sounds crazy, but in both of the regionals that I won, I did not lose any games until the cut. I didn't lose any games at all the first one, and in the second regional, I just lost one game in one of my cut rounds. And that's the only way I feel like that you can actually be safe. In the Octagon tournament, I won all my games, all my rounds until the last one, and then boop, bye-bye. So be careful. All right, so how do you stay alert and ready for 7 straight hours? So my question, Ben, is it eating loads of candy and chugging soda so that you get the caffeine drive? Is that a good way to do it?
I don't know why you would ask me like that. Obviously, you know I disagree with that statement like that.
Is it because you treat your body like it's a temple, Ben?
No, somewhere in between.
I just wanted to work that phrase in there.
I know you did.
But yeah, the way I roll, and everyone makes fun of me. Like, they're like, yeah, Tiny, the guy with all the bagels. I always have like 5 or 6 bagels in my bag because you never know how long that day is going to be. You never know if you're going to somehow miss lunch by some crazy thing. Now you're starving. All you can do is run over to the candy bar, grab a bunch of candy bars, eat those. You get a high for a while. You're playing bad because you're too jittery from the sugar. Then you crash. Now you can't even think. That's not the best way to run at a tournament.
Yeah.
So try to smooth it out. Bring food. I'm not going to recommend what foods to bring, but bring some sort of food that will give you some energy without bringing some crashes.
Maybe something that fills you up. You know, remember that, you know, it might be warm or you might be hungover from the night before, depending on what you've been doing. So think
Ben,
about
it. Come on.
I'm not suggesting you drink to excess. I'm just saying it's a possibility that you then, you know, you may want something along the lines of something with electrolytes or just a lot of water or, you know, even getting dehydrated just sitting there is a possibility if you're not drinking enough water.
Yeah. Another thing that I always do is I usually, for an event like this, will dress in a short sleeve shirt and then bring a light jacket-ish item that I can put in my bag so that if by some miracle, like they've cranked up the AC, I've got that covered. And if it's hot, which it often is in gaming experiences, then I've got that covered. Try to have all the weather conditions covered.
Yep, just be prepared.
Yep.
It's the best way to like make sure that you don't get taken out of, especially if you are dialed in. You are the Tiny Grimes. You can see your victory ahead of you. All you have to do is play the cards right. You know, you don't want to be distracted by the little things.
Yeah, definitely. All right. Another piece of advice that a lot of people don't do when they go to a major event is remember it's a social gathering. This is 120 people who share your passion. Yes, you want to beat them into oblivion. Yes, you want to grind them under the heel of your foot. But you also want to get to know these people. These are all potential friends. Talk to them. Get to know as many people as you can at the event. Hang out with them after the event. It's a great place to meet people and to really, you know, knit this community together. What makes me sad about not being able to go to this event is that it's the first major event where this community is getting together. And although it's not for the world title, it's still going to be a really cool event where everyone's getting together.
Yeah. No, it's really unfortunate that we won't be there. It sounds like we're going to miss out on a lot of fun, not just from Star Wars, but from a Game of Thrones. And even, you know, the Card Game DB podcast troupe. So for all the games that have podcasts, everybody's kind of been invited to do something in the evening based just on podcasting. And we're going to miss out on that, too.
Yep. We're going to have to podcast it. We're going to Skype into the hangout. Be like, yeah. What's up, guys?
I have no problem drinking by myself, talking to a video screen.
Sounds great. That sounds great.
Yep.
All right. I think those are our general tips. I have a couple really specific tips. So you're probably going to be on a plane or driving with friends, and you're going to have some downtime before the event. There's a couple things I would suggest you do. The first one is know every twist of Fate Pod. That is one of the absolute critical things in the game is to know, is my opponent running a twist or not? The other day when we had our league championship, I almost lost the tournament because I assumed that in his sprint deck, my opponent had the Falcon and he did not. And had I just looked at the board carefully, I would have realized it, but instead I made an assumption, and I went back and forth of whether I should play a Heat of Battle to kill his guy, but I thought, well, he might twist, so I'll just play this high-numbered card, win it, and it let him do 3 extra damage to an objective when I could have just played Heat of Battle and killed the guy attacking, but I was really afraid he might twist it. You have to know which pods have Twist of Fate in them.
And so, Tiny.
Yes, Ben?
I have a question.
What's that?
Which pods have Twisted Fate?
Lots of them. Lots of pods.
Would you like to list them for me?
Oh, maybe, you want to know the exact
ones. By side? and by the number of the objective?
I think this is something I can do.
Okay. Let's see.
Jedi has number 5, Secret of Yavin 4. Rebel has number 10, Leia's pod. Smugglers have Falcon's pod,
mm-hmm.
which is, oh man, what number is Falcon's pod? Is it 73?
Nope.
72?
Yes.
Okay. That's funny because I was going to guess 72 at first, and then I thought that was one of the sleuth pods. And let's see. They also have Hit and Run has one, which is pod, is that 36?
18.
Yes, that's what I meant. 18. 36 also has one. That's the dark side equivalent, the one that gives you the extra draw.
Yep.
All right, so that's all the light side, I believe, which
it is all the light side.
Kind of crazy. Dark side.
Especially when you're about to list all the dark side, which is insane.
Yeah, that's a lot different. Dark side has number 20, Council of the Sith for Sith. It also has Killing Cold, which I always forget the number of the pod. I think it's like 42 or something.
Nope, it's just 40.
40, yeah, 40 or 42. 42 is the other, the neutral dark side deck, dark side pod from that deck. Mm-hmm. Then Scum has the Jawa pod.
Right.
Which I have no idea what number it is. I just know every card in the Jawa pod. What number is that? Do you remember?
82.
And I'm pretty sure another one has one.
Sure it does.
Second. Oh, wow. For some reason I'm blanking. It is... Oh, wow. I can't remember off the top of my head. What is it?
Lucrative Contracts.
Oh, my goodness. I was going to say Lucrative Contracts, too. All right. Yeah, so there are those two. And then if you go over to Navy, they have number 30.
Yep.
And it's the Defense Protocol one.
You're absolutely correct.
And that's it, right?
Yep. You mentioned Reconnaissance Mission, which was 36. Yep.
Yep. So you got to know all those pods. You have to know every single one that has a twist. Do not be surprised by a twist. Now, here's a harder one. If you have the time, learn all the Heat of Battle pods. Because Heat of Battle is one of those cards that can be totally game-breaking. Because you think, okay, they can only do 2 damage. Luke is going to die. I know they don't have Force Choke in that deck. I know they don't have... whatever that card is called that can give you a blast or a unit damage. I know they don't have a number of other cards, but Heat of the Battle is the one that I don't know if they have. So, Ben, let's try to name some Heat of Battle pods. I know we probably won't get them all.
Well, I'm looking at them now, so...
Oh, well, then like I'll try. I know Obi-Wan has one.
Mm-hmm.
I know Vader has one.
Sure.
Beyond that, I really struggle.
So do you want me to do a quick rundown for you?
Yeah, let's just do a rundown.
So for the light side, it's Obi-Wan's pod, Mon Mothma's pod, number 9.
Mm.
Hit and Run again, 18. Yep. Message from Beyond, number 37.
Right.
Self-Preservation, number 48. And Wookiee Life Debt, number 69. That's really interesting to me is 3 of the pods for the light side that have Heat of Battles are Jedi.
That is interesting. And they're Jedi... Force weenie deck.
Right. Cards. Yeah. That's really interesting.
Yeah. So you could have 6 Heats of Battle in a Jedi weenie deck.
And for the dark side, we have Vader's pod number 19, Death and Despair, the Devastator's pod number 29, Reconnaissance Mission again.
Yep.
And then last but not least, the Trandoshan Terror number 85. So there's a lot less in the dark side Heat of Battle.
Are you sure about that? I thought there were some Navy pods. From the Battle of Hoth cycle that had it.
I searched Heat of Battle.
Wow, that's really surprising.
In the filter on Card Game DB with the dark side.
Wow.
And that's what came back.
Yeah, I'm not doubting you. I'm just doubting you. Wow, that's a little surprising. And then I guess if you have time, you could try to learn all the targets of opportunity. I feel like that's a little less important, but it's still useful.
There are plenty of times where knowing that they have a target of opportunity, when they attack with a chump, and you're like, oh, well, I don't need to even defend that. You did doesn't even have enough damage to blow up the objective that it's attacking. I'll chump block and not really think about it, or you know, I will do what I, you know, I'll let it go in a pose. And then they play a target of opportunity. If you weren't expecting it, that could be an objective. That could be the game.
Yep. That could be boom. All right. Well, everybody, have a great time at Gen Con. I hope this episode helps you prepare a little bit, gets you ready for what's to come. Basically, what's to come is a long day that's going to be grueling, some hard-fought games with some ill will at some point. Someone's going to either be mad at you or you're going to be mad at someone that you couldn't take something back. But at the end of the day, have a good time, do as best as you can, and meet as many people as you can.
Yeah, good luck, everybody.
All right, so last week, Ben and I talked about the meta quite a bit, and so we didn't think it would be all that fruitful to go over what we thought the meta was going to be like at Gen Con. But we do have friends all over the world and in the most glamorous of places like Indiana and our dear friend TGO. So welcome to the show, TGO. I thought we could talk a bit about the meta today.
Sounds like a plan. I'm happy to be on the show again.
All right. And you know what? There's no static this time, I don't think.
New laptop.
Ooh, he bought a new laptop just to be on the show.
To be honest, it was so I could stream Octagon.
Yeah, and we already mentioned TGO's stream, but go ahead, mention it one more time just so everybody knows for sure you're streaming.
My username on Twitch TV is TGO520. I'd give you a link, but I don't know the whole www thing.
That's good enough. They can go to Twitch TV and look that up.
Yeah, they can search me.
So let me ask you real quick, how have you found streaming? Is it easy to play games and narrate them?
No. I find that the narrating part is tough because I feel weird talking to myself.
Yeah.
And you're half focused on giving good commentary, half focused on the game. You're making mistakes in both. So good times all around.
Yeah, it's a little bit difficult. It does get easier as it goes, so that's something to look forward to. But then you also have to look forward to all the people who are going to write you and say, I can't believe you made this mistake. You're an idiot. And then everyone thinking you're an idiot in the state of the game. But that's okay. As long as you have thick skin, you'll be fine. And it's great to have another top-level player doing the stream. And especially someone who has, I don't know if I should say you have a different play style than me, but at least in the early games, you were choosing decks that played differently than the ones I chose. So if that continues to be the case, it'll be really cool for people looking to watch a stream to be able to see different play styles and how different people play the game.
Yeah. And to be fair, I can't look any worse than I did on our first video at Top Tier Gaming when I used a C-3PO to cancel an Admiral's orders. And then I got my Luke Skywalker Force Lightninged right after that. So it's really hard to top that bad play. But to be fair, the board state called for me to cancel that Admiral's orders. Little did I know I was going to draw two Trust Your Feelings the next turn.
Ooh, yeah. I mean... That doesn't sound like that bad of a play. You're right. It's a board state play. Like, can I afford to let them drop a Devastator? If I cannot afford that, then I'm going to have to cancel it.
Well, he already had a Death Squadron on board, if I remember correctly.
Oh, my.
So I think he was dropping... It was either another Death Squadron or it was a Devastator. I don't remember what it was.
Right.
But I couldn't afford it at the time. It would have put me pretty far behind.
So that's not that bad of a mistake.
I mean, had I no trust... Two Trust was going to come to me the following hand. I probably would have just let it go to the table and just targeted striked it away.
Yeah, so you're saying if you'd had a crystal ball, you could have played it better?
Yeah.
That's pretty insightful right there, man.
It is. It's a lesson to all the players out there. Be more insightful.
All right, I got a question for you. What do you think we're going to see as the major or the two or three major light side decks at Gen Con?
I have a feeling a lot of the... I don't know how to word this properly, but the players of lesser talents, I think they're probably going to bring Sluice Scout decks.
OK. Okay.
And it's going to be a variety. There's, you know, there's the different varieties of them. Some have the Lando, some have the Rebels. I've seen some with Jedi.
Mm-hmm. I have too. Those are the ones I hate because it's really hard to prepare for those.
Right. You don't know. It's a Sleuth Scout deck.
Right.
The other deck that I think is going to be big is, you hate the name, but I call it Super Friends.
Oh, well, I'm going to edit that out even. I hate the name so much.
I'm going to mention it so many more times, you're going to have to do so much editing.
Yeah, I might have to just turn it off right now.
No, but the Han, Chewie, Falcon, Luke, some people put Guardians in there.
Yeah.
I think that's the most typical build is with the Guardians. I've seen some that they play Lando. Obviously, they got to be all smugglers, but they still have Luke, because you can still play Luke with a Falcon. The only thing you're losing is trust your feelings, which
wow, I've never
could
seen.
Could be really.
That seems like a really bad idea.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you cut yourself off of Luke, but if you get like, a Falcon out.
So this is my point. Why would you run Luke in that deck?
I'm not advocating the deck.
Oh,
I'm just saying I've seen it.
Okay. Yeah, it seems terrible to me. The reason being that if you can only get your Luke out by a Falcon
or sheer dumb luck,
very limiting. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would never, ever say you should do that. I think if you're going to do that, you just take Luke out. Like my original build of that deck was Han, Chewie, Falcon, Lando, and Echo Caverns, which is still great. Or you can even put in something like the Blockade Runner or the Sleuth Scout. They're so cheap. They come with more operatives. I think there's a lot of ways to run it. I think splashing Luke in without having a Jedi affiliation is the wrong way to run it.
Yeah, I wouldn't do it. I've seen the raise the stakes in a lot of the Jedi smuggler decks too, just because raise the stakes also helps out, you know, Luke. Because it doesn't target smugglers, it's just all of your units.
Wait, what? Which one's raise the stakes?
The one that raises your unopposed bonus.
Okay, yeah, the unopposed.
Not across the Anowin or however you say it. Yeah. That one only targets smugglers.
Yep. That one I think could be cool in a build with, you know, the Lando build. So that all your guys are now getting an extra blast. That would be
really cool. Yeah, the pure smuggler deck, I mean, you got like Lando, Anowit, Chewie, Han, Falcon, or swap Anowit for raise the stakes.
And how do you feel about that pure smuggler one? Does it make you just too nervous and you're too reliant on the Wookiee life debt objective?
Well, that definitely makes the Wookiees way more playable because, I mean, I think they're just mediocre without it. You definitely need that. But you could still win without it, I think.
So, I mean, my question is, would you feel comfortable running the Han, Chewie, Falcon deck without the Guardians of Peace and relying entirely on top decking Wookiee life debt? Because if you don't get it, now you have no protection for your 2 health Han, your 2 health Lando. These are guys that are going to die pretty easily to any sort of Sith control deck.
Yeah, I mean, you're running that risk, but the smugglers, the light side decks in general right now, they have such a higher density of good units. You've got, if you're running Lando, Han, Chewie, Falcon, who am I missing? Renegade Squadron. You've got a good main unit in each of those pods, and you've got solid role-playing units in each of those pods.
Yep.
That if they're going to force choke a Lando, then, you know, Chewie comes up. You've got Han. They can't direct damage everything unless they've got their god set up with Palpatine and they're just blowing objectives up left and right.
The problem is the resources, though, because if they're spending 0 resources to force choke your Han that cost you 4 resources, that's a huge swing. So my fear is that, you know, I play Han, they force choke him. Next turn, I spend all my resources and I play Lando and a, you know, supplementary card, and they force choke Lando. Now they've had 2 turns of full resources where I have had 2 turns of no resources.
Right. No, I see how
that's to me where it gets tricky. It's not drawing the mains, it's being able to play them all.
Right. No, I can definitely see that being an issue, and I mean that's obviously why Guardians are so good. But at some point, do you think the light side's got to move away from them?
Yeah, I don't know. To me, it's all dependent on the meta. If the meta finally gets to a point where Sith control decks are not as prevalent, then I think, yeah, we move away from them. But until then, I know I can't. I mean, I originally started with that deck, and everyone was playing a scum deck because it was the new thing. And I was crushing everyone. It was amazing. And then people started going, okay, it's been 2 weeks. Time to start playing some Sith control again. And then it was like, oh, yeah. Yeah, that's kind of a problem. All my guys are dead.
So are you alluding to the fact that Sith control is still good?
I think Sith control is the best dark side deck right now.
I will not dispute that claim.
Yeah, so have you found a version you're particularly in love with, or is it pretty much just standard Sith control, and then there's a couple of different options that you think are good?
I just use the standard Sith control package, and then I'm doing the one-ofs for various other tricks and answers to various cards.
And meta calls and things like that.
Yeah, because as the dark side, you have to account for the sleuths, so you need a lot of two drops.
Right.
You have to be able to handle Chewbacca, Han, Lando. So getting away from Force Choke seems kind of bad. So yeah. why would I not play Vader right now?
Right. And then it seems to me that another real threat is the Falcon.
Yeah, that's why I've been saying I like the Cruel Interrogations pod.
Yep, I'm going to have to agree with that. Because you really have three cards in that pod that crush the Falcon. If they try to loop the Falcon, you can drop Interrogation Droid or Interrogation and just yank it right out of their hand.
And you know, lightning in a bottle with the objective. You know, you get the lucky pull. Yeah. I wouldn't rely on it.
Don't really rely on that, TGO. I'm not going to be like, all right, yeah.
Well, I'm not saying you rely on that, but it's an option. It's not a good option. It's an option.
Yeah. What are some of the two-drop pods that you would recommend people at least test out when they're trying to find that answer for Sleuth? Because you can't have like a whole deck of two-drops. I mean, I tried making a Trooper deck, and Han's in every deck, and he just ripped it apart.
How did that end, by the way?
Pretty well, if I recall. I think I had to go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do recall one game where it was not pretty.
Yeah. I don't think any games are pretty. I've played against the Trooper deck. Like, a couple people have said, I've got this really good Trooper deck, and I'm always excited.
That's an oxymoron.
Right. Well, it seems like it could be good on paper until first turn or second turn I drop either Han or Luke, and then they just throw their hands up and go, well, I can't beat that. And it's like, well, Han's in literally every deck now. So
yeah,
what
yeah,
if you can't you beat?
If you can't beat Han, you shouldn't be playing that deck.
Right. It's like, well, if you had played a Jedi Weenie deck, I could beat it. Okay, so could every deck.
Is that even in the meta?
It's in some metas probably, but not good metas. Not a lot. Let me rephrase that. Not top tier prepping for Gen Con metas.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Han Rex, all that kind of stuff. So what little or what two-drop pods have you been looking at as being promising? What do you think of the Jawas? Let's start there. That was the first one I tried.
I don't like the Jawas. They're one health. The plus side of them, they're free tactic units, right, which is fine.
Yep.
But they're one health. Han just picks him off. Lightsaber deflection picks him off.
Yep.
And the biggest downside to me is that when you lose the edge, they go back to your hand. So it's almost more it's more beneficial not to kill him. You just clog their hand with him.
Right. Yeah, they're interesting cards in that I actually really like them. Before the Sleuth deck became really big, I loved them. Because I consider them a pro card. And what I mean by that is a card that has these weird options that you might not think about. So what I'll do is let's say I know that there's going to be two battles this turn on defense. I'll block the first one with the Jawas, knowing I'm going to lose anyway, most likely. But then they go back to my hand, and now I have a much bigger hand for that more important edge battle that's coming. And you can do some cool tricks like that. The problem is if you're putting them in there to combat the sleuth deck and to not let them get unopposed, they're not doing that because they're either dying because they only have one health or you're losing the edge and they're going back to your hand. So they're not actually combating that deck. And worst case, even if you win the edge and you get to focus them, you're not actually dealing with the threat long term because they don't have any unit damage. You're just putting a little Band-Aid on this gaping wound that's coming.
Yeah. I actually don't think the Jawas are the worst answer against Sleuth Scouts. I think they're worse against the Han Chewie Falcon decks.
Yeah, I don't think they do much of anything against those, unless you use them offensively. That's the way I like to use them against that deck, is to try to be like, okay, Han attacked last turn. I can swing in, put a couple of focus on, you know, a big guy. But what's the problem with that Han Chewie Falcon deck? You put three focus on Han. Should you consider Han locked out?
No, you've got to worry about those pesky Cloud City operatives.
You've got...
And bamboozles.
Right, you got two operative, two bamboozle, two trust your feelings. You have to put, like, five focus on a dude to guarantee he's not going to whoop you next turn. It's really tough.
It's brutal.
Yeah.
Do you think by going offensive with, like, Palpatine or the Jawas or something is a good idea, and then all of a sudden they drop a double operative, you know, two operatives, and it's like, well, that was nothing I did last turn.
Well, not only that, but then if they put them both on Palpatine, Palpatine's locked down long term.
Well, the operatives can't move it to Palpatine.
Okay, not the operatives, but Bamboozle.
Bamboozle is bad.
Yeah. And they can lock down other guys long term. They can lock down your resource chuds long term and just completely mangle your game.
But what I find funny though right now is I still hear people complaining about the Emperor being still being too strong. I'm like, really?
Yeah, I don't think he is right now.
Have you played with Edge of Darkness yet?
Yeah, I mean he's still good if you use him defensively and you set it up so that you're definitely going to win an edge battle, which is a lot harder because light side got a lot better having four Twists of Fate in that Han Chewie Falcon deck.
But they needed that, though, because the dark side...
Yeah.
They were packing, what, four Twists of Fates at one point.
Yeah, definitely.
You could conceivably have a deck with all Twists of Fates with Sith and Scum. Well, it's not all. You're going to be... You'll have, nine of them?
Yeah, you would have the two from Lucrative, the two from the Jawas, the two from Council... that's six.
Two from Killing Cold.
Two from Killing Cold. We're up to eight, and then you could throw
one from Mission Briefing.
Yeah. Reconnaissance Mission.
Or reconnaissance, yeah.
Yep, so you could have nine. Do you think that's a good idea to have a deck with nine twists?
No, probably not.
No, it's a terrible idea.
Because you've got a bunch of bad units.
Well, the other problem is, it sounds great to have three twists in your hand, but it's actually not. Like, if you draw six cards, and you draw three twists, a two drop, another true drop, and a resource. You're going, yeah, I would have rather had a force choke, a Vader, a Palpatine, and now I'm holding twists. I have to now discard twists or like go into these edge battles where all the cards in my hand are twists. I can't actually win the edge. All I can do is screw my opponent, but I can't actually win the edge battle.
Well, if you're on the defense and they ditch all their cards.
Yeah, but... Still,
only bad players do that.
Yeah, it's a really dicey scenario. There is that point where enough twists is enough twists. You don't actually need more than about, like for me, four is probably one too many. I think three is the ideal number I like in a deck.
I'm happy with four. You get those awkward hands, and they're not terribly awkward with the double twist.
Right.
But I agree, three twists is just kind of awkward.
Yeah, you don't want.
I would rather have one twist and an extra Sith library in my hand just to try to play a Sith library than a twist.
Yep, I agree.
Try to induce a second or third card out of their hand.
Yeah, you have more room to negotiate. Have you ever played two twists in one edge stack?
No.
I don't think I have either.
Not to my recollection.
Yeah, that would be interesting. You're like, I'll put a twist in, they put another card in, and you're like, well, I want to bluff more cards, I'll put another twist in.
Well, at that point, you're better off just going to another engagement.
It would, well, maybe. Probably not, but it would be interesting.
If you're dark side, you're defending.
Yep.
They play a card, you play a card that's a twist.
What if
they
play attacking, though? That's where it's different.
Yeah, then maybe playing a second twist isn't... I still don't like it.
No, it's probably a terrible play. I'm just sort of throwing that out there, that if you have a whole hand of twists, it might get to a point where you feel tempted to do that. All right, so a pod that I like to deal with the Sleuth deck is Greedo's pod. You get three 2-drops. They all have unit damage. Greedo has 2 unit damage. Greedo is pretty disgusting for only 2 cost. He has 2 force icons. He has 3 health capacity. This dude is really good.
Yeah, I don't like his forced reaction and that is all his icons are white, but
yeah.
He's got 3 health, so unless they've got a double blaster or multiple units with blasters, he's going to survive.
And the Sleuth deck usually doesn't because they're just rolling in with the one guy with the one gun and it makes it a lot easier.
Yeah. I think the best units against the Sleuth Scout decks are maybe the Trandoshans because they got that double blaster. So that puts pressure on the Sleuth Scout deck to win the edge battle.
Interesting. I had tried them at first and didn't like them as much, and I went to the Greedo pod because I felt like the Greedo pod was giving me a little bit more counterattack. So, like, they attack me, and then I'm able to strike back later in the game and actually blow up some...
Yeah, because they've got the paid informant with the blast.
Exactly. And I felt like it gave me a little bit more counterpunch to be able to do stuff. And then if you're using Spice Visions, you can actually attack with one guy and do 3 unopposed. But that is an interesting idea that the Trandoshan Hunter allows you to actually kill a Sleuth Scout outright with his 2 blaster if you're going to win it.
Plus it's got Bossk, so if there's the off chance you're not against the Sleuth Scout deck, and it's the Han Chewy Falcon deck, you've got Bossk.
So I have a question for you. Are we going to see anything at Gen Con that's not Han Chewy Falcon or Sleuth?
You know what? I was going to look in the building like a Rebel deck and test that out. I haven't gotten around to it. I was of the opinion when I first saw the Falcon pod that went a long way in helping the Rebel vehicle decks.
I was not that impression.
Well, you've got the resource. You've got a twist.
Yeah, that's true.
You've got a unit that can remove a focus from any of your units.
True.
And you've got the Falcon.
Yep, the Falcon's looping isn't quite as good.
No, you have... Right,
you don't have a lot of resources in a Rebel deck, usually, is the main thing. So it's really hard to loop it, and you're not putting anything good in its place.
Outside of the only thing you can probably put in are operatives or maybe a Leia.
Right. Yeah, but I actually love a Rebel deck right now because I feel like when people see Rebel, they have to mulligan their hand around a Sleuth deck, and I feel like a Rebel deck, you have to mulligan differently. Like, you want Palpatine in that matchup. You want the early Vader. And if they're mulliganing out of that stuff to get awful 2-drops and you put out your good units, you could steamroll them before they even recover from their mulligan.
Yeah. That's another reason why I wanted to look into Rebels. Because you throw them off by playing the Rebel affiliation.
Yep. What about straight Jedi? Do you think, I'm sure we'll see a straight Jedi deck, but do you see a highly competitive straight Jedi deck out there right now?
I don't. I haven't really done a whole lot with straight Jedi, but I just feel their options are just too limited. They're still constrained on resources. If it's just straight Jedi. I still want to play with Obi-Wan, but I don't know where to put him yet.
Yeah. It feels like Like, there was, it looked like there might be something cool because you've got the new targeted strike for force users and you could do some neat stuff. But the smuggler cards are just so good that it seems to really overshadow all that right now.
My problem with that is, why bother running a inferior pod when you can just run Han Solo's pod and right. You have your two units with targeted strike, Luke and Han?
Yep. I guess what I mean is you could still run Han and Luke in a deck, but then instead of having mostly smuggler cards, now you're going mostly Jedi cards.
Okay, yeah. I suppose if that's the case, then yeah, there could be something out there, but I haven't looked into that.
Yeah, I've looked at it, and I haven't. It's just that problem of the smugglers are so strong that whenever I start building that Jedi deck and I test it a little bit, I'm like, yeah, no, this isn't even close. Like, I gave up the Falcon for this.
Yeah.
Or I gave up, you know, any other number of cards. I gave up Chewbacca for this. You know, it's just hard to do that. So let's wrap up real quick our talk on dealing with the super sprints. I think there's one pod that's better than all the ones you've mentioned for dealing with these sleuth decks.
I think I have an idea what it is.
Yeah, you are the one who showed it to me as being better. And it is the Junlin Wastes and the Tuskens. And the reason I think the Tuskens are so good is because they're a combination of Greedo's pod and the Jawa's pod. They have that white tactics, but they have the black unit damage. So you're able to do unit damage, and you might be able to tactics them down also. What you give up is the counterpunch and the blast, which worries me. But it seems like the tactics might make it worth it.
It's also a very double-edged sword, because in the deck you're playing the Junlin Waste in is very character-heavy. So you're also slowing yourself down if the Waste is in play.
Yeah, that's why I would only run one copy, and I would hope that I see it in my opening four and I can junk it. Because if you don't see it in your opening four, that sleuth deck will usually blow up an objective before you can stabilize the board. If they do, and if you put up the Waste, you could be in big trouble.
Yeah, and they won't attack it because they know it hurts you more than them.
Yeah, exactly. There's no reason for them to attack it. So, yeah, the objective itself, I think, is awful in the deck for that matchup. But I think the cards are great. But then when you flip it around, the objective is really good against the Han Chewie Falcon setup, because most of the units you care about are elites, and most of theirs are not.
Right, because, yeah, Chewie's not elite, Han's not elite, Luke's not elite.
Yeah, Luke's like half elite.
Yeah, he's moderately elite.
So it makes it a little bit interesting, but I think that's, if I was going to Gen Con and I was trying to pick a pod to slot into a Sith Control deck to deal with that, right now, I would waffle between Greedo and the Tuskens, and I would have to do more testing, but I think I'm leaning towards the Tuskens. If you had to put in a pod, which one would you pick?
Tuskens.
Tuskens, even over the Trandoshans, which handle Han, Chewie, Falcon so well?
You could run one of each.
But I'm saying, if you only had room for one in this meta, which one would you put in?
I would probably choose the Tuskens then, because they've got... There's multiple good cards in there. It's the Tuskens, the Gaffy Stick,
right,
and the Bantha, which the Bantha is actually semi-relevant because of Saboteur.
That's true. Saboteur is a real game wrecker, and he's in Lando's pod, blowing up any two or less enhancement, which is essentially control rooms go bye-bye from the Saboteur.
Control rooms, Vader's lightsaber, Sith libraries.
Yep. I saw Ben playing a game where first turn, control room, he doesn't double focus it. He plays like some other awful unit. They saboteur it. He loses.
Yeah.
It's like he basically lost an entire turn setting up, and now it's gone.
Yeah, that saboteur is a pesky little unit.
Yeah, and especially if you mulligan into that hand, right? You're like, yes, I mulligan into my resource hand. So next turn I can play Devastator, and they blow it up. And then you're like, oh, so now I wasted my first turn. I can't play Devastator, which I mulliganed into this beautiful hand, and now I'm just stuck playing terrible units, praying that I top deck more resources.
Yeah.
All right, so what do you think are some options then for the dark side? We've talked about some options for light side. We talked about Sith control being good. Do you think it is viable to run like a capital ship or the Desolation of Hoth or one of these decks that's a little more aggressive and running more blast damage?
Well, I don't think racing the light side is quite the answer, because it's usually a race you're going to lose unless your deck is just that fast. And there's not a whole lot of those right now. I mean, putting out one capital ship every other turn, or maybe if you're lucky every turn, is pretty good. But if they got the Slew Scouts, they're running right past you, and they're probably going to blow up three objectives well before you get the dial to 12. At least that's been my experience. I tried a Navy deck with the forward command post or forward command center, whatever it's called.
Yep.
I was running a bunch of the Death Squadron, Star Destroyers, the General's Imperative, all those AT-ATs or AT-STs, sorry.
Right.
And I was always coming up one turn short.
Yep.
I'm like, you just can't race them. You're just not fast enough. And I was even playing with Tusken Raiders in that deck.
Hmm. Oh yeah. It was a
Jundland Navy deck, which yep. I think is going to be amazing when the next Force pack comes out because of the AT-ATs.
Yeah. I did the same thing. I ran basically a max shield deck to try to get as much blast as I could. That didn't work. Then I ran a capital ships Jundland Waste deck to try to slow down the Han Chewie Falcon decks. And that worked great against the Han Chewie Falcon deck because I got out the Waste. And then it did not work at all against the Sloop deck. And it's just, like you said, you really can't race a Sloop deck. The only way to beat that deck is to just engage it head on with two cost units.
Well, the one way you can race it is if they have a terrible setup. and then you're just playing a bad Rebel deck.
Right. You're like, so you can race it if they get really unlucky.
Again, I'm not advocating that.
I like your thoughts.
Maybe if you got a little voodoo doll for somebody's deck in your, I don't know.
Oh boy. Well, sure. I guess that could work.
Yeah, if people want to play base by luck, that's their option.
How about a scum deck? Have you seen any? I mean, I think there are scum decks that are viable that are running Sith control, but do you think there is a scum deck that's like a scum capture all scum deck that's going to be really viable in a tier one?
I'm going to say no. Every scum deck that I've tried, and I've tried pure scum decks, I've tried Sith and scum, and actually, you know what? I'm going to take that back just a little bit. The deck I was trying today on the stream before the guy rage quit on me, I had two of Bosk's pod in there.
Uh-huh.
I was trying that out. I was actually quite happy with the transitions, and I had a Bosk in my hand in case he ever played. I was going to just hold Bosk until he played Chewie because I didn't really need him. I had a Vader on the board. I believe I even had an Emperor in my hand, and I was a turn away from playing him because I was going to have five resources on my next turn, so my following turn I could have played the Emperor.
Ah, gotcha.
But I think that deck was playing okay, and I believe I was up against a Han Chewie Falcon deck. But as far as like pure Sith or pure scum goes, I don't think there's a viable one out there. They're too inconsistent for my taste. You've got like the Jabba's Palace. Or not Jabba's Palace, that's the enhancement. Jabba's Reach. Mm-hmm. Is that the one where your hand size gets plus one?
Yeah.
It could be Jabba's Orbs. I don't remember which one it is, but the one that gets plus one reserve. That, you know what, in a vacuum that card looks amazing.
Right.
But in practice, I've not had any good luck with it. Though I've played pure scum decks a few times now, and I think I've only gotten my reserve increased one time out of all the games I've played.
Yeah.
And I've never gotten the dream setup of Carbonite Transport, Tatooine Crash, and Jabba's Reach. It's just not going to consistently happen.
Yeah, I've even had that setup, and it's just not as good as it seems, because if you get that setup, they're like, okay, Jabba's reach is going down.
Yeah.
Like, you're not going to get that for long. You know, it takes a little while to get that going. Basically, first turn, you'll get an extra draw out of it. And then they hit it. They either knock it down right there with a sleuth deck or put a bunch of damage on it. Second turn, maybe you get two extra draw, and then they knock it out. So it's pretty good. You get three draw if you get the perfect setup. But that's not really worth it because you're not usually going to get the perfect setup. So it's pretty rare.
And another problem I have with the scum is that, to me, their cards seem inferior to the Jedi cards and to the smuggler cards. And Sith and Navy cards.
Yeah, I think I can agree with that.
I think they're on... I might even say the Rebels are better than the scum.
See, the funny thing is, it depends on the matchup. Like, Lucrative Contracts is really good and can help against, like, a fast deck, like a Sleuth deck or a Rebel deck.
The Corrupt Officials are good against a fast deck.
Exactly, because if you play two copies of it, you have four of them. The problem is, I don't like playing two copies of that pod because then you get, like, all these cards that just kind of sit in your hand and clog your hand. It's really difficult to find the exact correct percentage of cards. I have a deck I really like for scum, but it's just not as good as my Sith Control deck because, like you said, the units are just worse. There is not a comparable card to Palpatine and Vader. And if there are, you know what? Just run it in a scum deck. I mean, just run it in your Sith deck. Just take that one card that is comparable.
Yeah, I think Jabba is comparable to the Emperor. He's immune to Rebel Assaults, and he costs one less, and he's giving you two Black Blasters. He's got the same health.
Yeah, but what he does not have...
Is Blast,
and one of the things that makes the Emperor best is looping those events. That's one of the things that makes him the best.
That is true. Of course, with Jabba, though, you've got the opportunity to maybe better abuse Bounty.
Yes, if you're going to use Jabba like that, then I think he can be really good. But my point is, I don't think you can just drop him into a scum deck. I'm sorry, into a Sith deck and be like, yep, he's a replacement for Palpatine.
No. Not by any stretch of the imagination. Because the Emperor's pod, if you're going to wholeheartedly swap the sets out for each other, the Emperor's set is way better. Why give up a Force Lightning and Force Chokes and Sith Libraries and Protectors?
Right. Yep.
Or a prized possession, a reversal of fate, the sail barge, and a Gamorrean guard.
Exactly.
It's a strictly inferior pod to the Emperor's. But the units, I think, are comparable. Jabba and the Emperor.
And here's a question for you. Would you say the Emperor's pod is still the best pod in the game, or would you say Falcon's pod is better?
I like the Falcon's better.
Yeah, I'm torn. I think they're the two best. I think Force Lightning, for me, might put Palpatine's ahead just because Force Lightning is so necessary for the dark side.
Yeah, but the downside to the Emperor's pod is the objective.
Yeah, that's true.
That's the worst objective for the Sith.
See, I don't entirely agree with that. I think if you're playing against a fast deck, it is. But if you're playing against a Jedi deck, especially a slower Jedi deck, I don't mind it as much, and sometimes I'll even keep it on purpose because you get those cheaper events. Paying two for a lightning, paying one for interrogation is phenomenal, especially if you're able to then loop them, maybe play two lightnings on one turn for four instead of six. Those are a pretty big difference.
No, I agree. That is a good benefit of the objective, but the four health, that's sometimes one swing away from being blown up against some decks.
Yep, definitely. Like when I get it, if I ever get two in my opening hand against a sleuth deck, I'm just thinking, well, that's a real problem. Like I have to keep one.
And that's also a problem I have with the Junlin Waste.
Yeah.
It's four health. I love the objective against certain matchups. But of course, if you know you're playing a scout deck, that's going to the bottom anyway. So it's generally not a problem unless you flip it up mid game.
Yeah, and I think that one has to be a 4. If that one was a 5, I think that would be a huge problem, just because it's so, so strong.
Yeah. It would be ridiculous at 5.
Yep.
It's still pretty ridiculous at 4.
Yeah.
But I don't see them ever making a 3 damage capacity objective unless the thing is, like, ridiculously good.
Yeah. I would like to see that, actually. That would be interesting.
It would have to be so amazing, though, to justify that.
Yeah. You could almost have that one be a while undamaged, because once it gets damaged, it's dead.
Then you're giving it the kiss of death, though.
Oh, I know, but it could be some crazy effect like, while undamaged, your opponent cannot deploy characters.
Yeah, because that wouldn't be completely broken.
No, right, exactly. I'm just saying, like, it would have to be totally broken. And it wouldn't be that broken. Like, it would just be really meta-shifting, right? Because you could still play vehicles, droids, creatures. You would just have to run this deck that you could no longer run a flat character deck. So, like, you would have to put the Falcon in and maybe Renegade Squadron and have a more balanced deck. It would be a way to force the meta to run these more balanced decks. It would be a terrible idea, let me be clear on that.
I'm going to send an email to FFG to never let you design a card.
Yeah, I got all kinds of design ideas. So since we went down this route, I'm going to say this real quick. I think they should design an affiliation that says your reserve is 5 instead of 6, and you get to choose one of your objectives to start the game.
That seems reasonable.
Yeah, I think that would be a really cool way to let some of these high synergy decks work better. But at the same time, it's a huge punishment. One card every single turn.
Yeah.
So I think it would allow for, like, trooper decks to have a better shot at it. Some capture decks where you just want to have a card capture to reduce the weak way. And would allow future decks that are sort of built around an objective. It'd still be dangerous because it could still blow that objective up, but at least you would know that you could start with it in play. So there you go. There's my card design idea for the day. You're welcome, FFG.
Bad idea.
All right. So is there anything else you want to add to this discussion, TGR, or should we just call it for the day?
I think we've covered just about everything. I mean, we didn't really talk about Navy decks.
Yeah, for good reason. I mean, I think we did, right? You can't really race light side.
Oh, yeah, we did. That's correct.
So why don't you describe yourself briefly so that if people are at Gen Con, I won't be there, Ben will be there, but you know who will be there? TGO will be there.
That's right. And I was given the kiss of death today by the table flip guys.
How is that?
They picked me to win Nationals.
How is that the kiss of death, though?
It just is. They're putting high expectations on me.
It just seems kind of jinxy.
Yeah, not that I'm going to wilt under pressure or anything like that. I've played card games long enough, but it's like, to me, that's like the kiss of death when someone is like, you're going to win.
Gotcha. Let me throw this out there to you. Are you going to top 16?
I was just going to say, my expectations for the tournament are to at least make top 16. I will be disappointed if I don't. I will be extremely happy if I make it to the finals. If I win, you guys probably won't hear the end of it. At least until next year when Nationals roll around again. Or at least until Worlds.
Yeah, if you do win Nationals, what I'm going to say is I wasn't there and it was not a world title. So who cares? No, just kidding. It's going to be actually a huge victory for whoever is able to win this. It's probably not going to be the full 120, but if it's 100, I mean, winning a 100-man tournament doesn't matter if it's world champions or a world championship or not. That's a huge accomplishment.
That Thursday is going to be a grind because it starts at noon.
Yeah.
And they're allotting like 8 hours for the preliminary rounds.
Yep.
So there's 8 o'clock.
Yep.
At the earliest.
Right.
Then Maybe they give us a break for dinner. I don't know. Then you're looking at if it's top 16 or top 32. If it's top 32, what is that, four more rounds?
Oh, my goodness. I hope it's not 32. That would be. I don't think it will be. I think it'll be 16.
Well, I'm hoping for I'm hoping it's top 16.
Yeah.
Because then that's only a few more rounds.
One thing to keep in mind that I should have said earlier, FFG has a nasty habit of doing this at major events. They make the time a little bit shorter than it should be because they're trying to squeeze in so many rounds. So if you have a deck that's a really slow deck, you might want to reconsider it. The round might be 10 minutes shorter than it usually is.
So what you're saying is play light side first?
Yeah, play your sleuth deck first.
I will take that into consideration.
Yeah, no, really, though, build a faster deck than you might normally. If you have two decks, one's a little faster than the other one, a deck that either is faster or that you can play faster, bring that deck. Because it'll be whatever the minimum is. Is it 60 minutes is the minimum?
I thought the minimum was 50.
Wow.
I thought the range was 50 to 70.
Yeah, then it very well may be 50-minute rounds.
Ugh.
So, yeah, be ready for that. At Game of Thrones, the standard, I think, is 60, and they did 50. And everyone was stunned that they went under the minimum. So be ready for that. That could happen. Don't be surprised if it does happen.
So there could be a lot of games going to time.
Yeah, there really will be a lot of games going to time, I think. So win that first game. And play quickly and be on your opponent. If they're going slow at all, you know, give them some business. If you need to call the TO over, call the TO over. Don't let them stall their way into some sort of draw.
Can I mention one thing?
Go for it.
That I would like, you know, I'd like you to put this on the podcast. It's about the Lukes.
Yeah, I already did.
Oh, you mentioned that?
Yep. But go ahead. Tell them your experience.
Well, I got the promo Lukes. I got two of them the other night. And when you put them not side by side, but in front of the standard cards that aren't print on demand, the promo Luke is a little bit taller and a little bit wider. Hmm. So when you cut a person's deck, we noticed this yesterday. When you cut a person's deck, you can see where the Luke Skywalkers are at.
That's
so
interesting.
My solution is that I'm going to ask my opponents each round if they have the promo Lukes, and I'm going to ask them to remove them from their deck. If they refuse, I'm going to call a judge, and I'm going to ask if they can, you know, if the judge can have them remove it, because they're marked cards, in my opinion.
Yeah, I just looked. The promo Darth Vader's TIE Fighter has the same problem.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't even check the TIE Fighters because I wasn't playing with it.
Yeah, the TIE Fighter has the exact same problem. I just put two cards in front of them, one being an Erebosh Red 5, which is fine, and I also have some Chinese cards. But Luke and the TIE Fighter are too tall, so you are correct. Those are marked cards.
I emailed FFG about it, and they gave me a standard, no... you know, a nothing response.
We'll look into
They're like, yeah, we'll look into it.
Right.
So I was like, tempted to respond.
I bet it surprised them. To be honest, I bet it surprised them. I bet they were like, what? They are?
Does FFG, do their people usually run these events?
Yes. So you will have FFG people doing all the pairings. Probably Nate will be the rules guy walking around. There'll probably be two FFG people walking around since it's such a big event. Yeah, it'll be an FFG employee who is closely associated with the game.
Well, I'll probably bring it to their attention as soon as I get there then.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to call an opponent on it and like have them get like any penalty or game loss or whatever it may be. I just don't want them. I don't want them in the deck. I don't care if they take the Luke out.
Right.
And when they finally play the Luke, they put the promo one in. I don't care. I just don't want it in the deck while he's drawing from it.
Yeah, that's perfectly understandable that you don't want your opponent to have marked cards in their deck. Seems reasonable.
I thought so.
All right, TGO. Well, thanks for coming on, providing some insight to our listeners, and we will all be rooting for you at Gen Con. We have adopted you as a member of the Smuggler's Den since we cannot make it. And so, you know, win one for us, man. Win one for the Smuggler's Den.
Well, I'm going to try to win one for Top Tier Games first.
No. Just because that's your main association, win one for us.
Okay, I'll work on that.
All right, thanks.
But thanks for giving me the kiss of death again.
I didn't say you were going to win. I just said we're rooting for you.
Oh, okay, okay.
Jarrett's going to win. There, see, now he's got the kiss of death. So now you.
Oh, man, I thought we were BFFs, man.
No, I just said that so that you would win because I said he would win, so he would now lose.
Oh, I see what you're doing. I see what you're doing there. Yeah. I got it. Yeah. We're good.
All right, good.
We're still BFFs.
I'll see you on your stream next time.
All right, man, take it easy.
All right, bye.
Bye.
All right, till the next time.
May the force be with you.